Amazon is hiring near you. Earn a competitive wage and start as soon as 7 days. No resume or experience required. Health and safety are a top priority with all of our roles and sites. Amazon is taking precautions in our buildings to keep people healthy. Go to amazon.com/apply. That's amazon.com/apply. Amazon is an equal opportunity employer.
On this episode of the iFilmmaker podcast, we're covering the new Panasonic S1H. Welcome back to another episode of the iFilmmaker podcast. My name is Ariel Martinez, and today we're talking about the new Panasonic S1H. Pretty excited about this camera, I'm not going to lie. This one we did cover a little bit. I guess a couple months ago when it was actually first announced, but they didn't announce it with the full spec sheet. Now we have a full spec sheet. We have a lot of things to cover on today's episode. And it's pretty exciting. I gotta say, I don't think I've ever been this excited about a camera, even though I gotta be honest, I haven't decided yet if I will end up picking it up or not, but it's more of a priorities issue than it is a kind of gear or lack thereof of usefulness issue, because this camera would absolutely be useful for me. But yeah, it's more of that though. Before we get to that though, I just want to remind everybody that we are live on Instagram. We're live on Instagram and we have several people already joining us in, and I want to give a shout out to all of you guys that are joining us live right now for this exciting episode. Just remember everyone that we are going live now on our Instagram page at iFilmmaker Podcast. So that is on Instagram. We go live. This one wasn't really announced, so make sure you're following and you get notified whenever we do go live. So make sure you're following us there. So yeah, we do, as I mentioned, we have a lot to cover. I have a laundry list of things that I kind of want to cover. Some of these things we're going to skim through, others we're going to talk a little bit more in depth on, especially the recording formats. For those of you watching live, make sure that you go ahead and ask your questions, and we'll try to kind of go back and forth there. And I am going to apologize ahead of time, because as much as I tried to, I'm trying to keep this as organized as possible. Like, I want to talk about all of the physical features, then all of the technical features, and then all of the kind of operational features. It's kind of mixed up here a little bit, but I'm going to try to keep it as organized as possible. So bear with me on that one. So starting off with this camera here. So here's the thing. So I am a user and avid believer of the Panasonic GH5. It's still a phenomenal camera. The Micro Four Thirds, it's something that obviously we had to work around. The lack of low light, something that we had to work around. But even with those downsides, everything else about that camera is just amazing, amazing, amazing. So yeah, now moving forward, they released the GH5S, then they released the S1, and then the S1R, and now we have the S1H. It's been a gradual progression, and it actually, if you think about it, it's happened pretty fast. Panasonic has really been pushing the bar rather quickly. Now the S1H, it is now priced at $4,000. $4,000 and should be released by the end of September. So yeah, it's definitely their priciest SLR camera, but I believe that it's definitely worth the price, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. With all these features here, it's hard not to justify that. It's quite justifiable, that price point for a camera like this. So, So starting with the physical features, it is a much beefier camera. It is much noticeably bigger, even though they kept a lot of the same kind of functions and features physically. The main most notable thing is how the kind of the screen bulges out of the back there, and that's because they added a fan into the camera. So they added vents because at these high recording rates, This camera needs to be cooled down. It is going to get hot in there, so they need to cool that down. So they added a ventilation system that apparently is going to help do that, which is incredible. It seems like to me that they're basically attempting to kind of mesh a full-on cinema camera with SLR camera, and they're pushing the standard for something like that right now, which is quite incredible. And they're getting closer and closer to doing something like that. So yeah, it's a beefier camera. They added a fan in the back, and yes, the fan does make noise. So if you plan on using the scratch audio from the internal built-in mic on this camera, try not to record 4K because it's gonna get quite noisy. Maybe if you're shooting outside, it won't matter, but I'll always recommend, even without the fan, I always recommend not using the internal microphone if you plan on using audio. Just my recommendation. The screen. The screen is something that, man, they really, really thought about, thought this one through. They listened to basically their, to consumers. Really, really impressive how they were able to kind of add another movement and mechanism there, because one of the biggest frustrations with the screen on the GH5, at least for me, they're asking online about autofocus. We're going to get to autofocus in a little bit. So back to the screen, at least for me, the biggest frustration on GH5 was that whenever I like to use the camera with the screen completely flipped out so that I can go up and down as I need to. But however, if I'm shooting externally via HDMI, or if I have a headphone jack or anything else like that, the screen, I'm then very, very limited in how far I can tilt my screen up and down. And that's very, very frustrating. So now they added this mechanism that before you flip the screen out, you can actually pull the entirety of that mechanism out of the camera, and then you can flip the screen out. And basically, this gets out of the way of any connections that you may have, whether it's HDMI, HDMI, headphone jack, audio, whatever it is you have connected to the camera, the screen, you can now swivel the screen all the way around, and it won't get in the way because of this new mechanism that they added, which is very, very awesome. It's very, very useful. It's really, really cool. So I'm very, very happy about that, that they added that to this camera. Some of the buttons on this camera, from what I saw, they actually light up in the dark, which is very interesting. You can hit there's a dedicated backlight button that you can hit, and I believe it's located at the front of the camera, but I think that you can customize that. Don't quote me on that part, but there's a button that you can press and it'll light up some of your buttons. I know it does. And in addition to that, it also lights up that LCD screen that's located at the top of the camera that shows your settings. Now let's talk about that LCD screen. It's quite useful. I'm just thinking out loud right now. I don't think I've had a camera with an LCD screen at the top. This is like some more of a photography sort of feature. But it's really, really awesome. It's a 1.8 inch LCD screen that's located at the top that shows all of your settings. It shows all of your settings, whether you're on photo mode and video mode or photo mode or video mode. It shows all your settings. It is actually quite useful. It's actually quite useful because, let's say, sometimes I, want to just see my image on screen, and I don't want all the settings and all the mess and chaos to be on that same screen that I'm recording on. Well, now I have a dedicated screen to see all of my settings. So, if you want to have, your full screen free of any congestion in there, you can just look at that screen up top and see that what settings you're using. And this also works for audio, which is awesome. So whenever you switch your camera to stills mode or video mode, that little LCD screen at the top is going to change the features or settings that it's displaying to you. So if you're on video mode, it'll show you some audio levels if you so choose. I believe you can turn that off. But it's so, so useful. It's really, really good. And again, this is really, in my opinion, the epitome of what it means to be by consumers for consumers, by filmmakers for filmmakers, things like that, because these are people that I can tell they use this gear. They use this gear for so long. We've had companies giving us products and we're all left dumbfounded because, you know, we can't believe that they didn't fix this one really big issue. And I'm not talking about this issue in general. I'm just talking about, I'm not talking about this issue specifically. I'm talking about, you know, in general. You know, this is something so small, but it's such a big convenience for us shooters that really enjoy that. So moving on, there are two SD card slots, not one, but two. In previous models, the Panasonic S1 and the S1R actually had an SD card slot and an XQD card slot. Now, I'm an owner of the Sony FS7, which requires two XQD card slots, and I know very well how expensive those cards can be. So putting a slot like that in an SLR camera like this, or the S1 and S1R, was getting quite pricey. I mean, the reason you go for an SLR style camera is because you want to keep not only cost down, but, you know, you want to basically work more efficiently. And the XQD, I don't believe, is the best method to do that, in my opinion. But anyways, so it does have two SD card slots, which is awesome. It's great. However, it supports a UHS 2 card that are like something like 300 megabits per second or more, something like that, or up to something like that. But yeah, they have to be very, very fast cards. And yeah, they're not cheap either, but much cheaper than XQD card for sure. But yeah, you need fast SD card slots. And now both of these cards can work a few separate different ways. One of which I heard about this for the first time. So you can use this for relay recording, backup recording, or allocating recording. So relay recording is basically the normal way that I think most of us use these card slots, where you have two cards, and if card A gets full in the middle of an interview, you don't have to stop. It'll automatically jump onto card B, and basically it'll continue on the recording. You never have to stop. The cool thing, though, is that you can actually hot swap these out. So while it's recording in card B and it no longer is recording in card A, you can take card A out and put an empty card in there. And once it's done with card B, you can go, it'll automatically go right back to card A. That's pretty cool. And then the backup recording, I think we all know what that is. The backup recording is basically it'll record both cards at the same time. So you'll have two cards in there and it'll record both cards at the same time. And basically if one fails, you have the other one as a backup. This is more important for, like, from what I understand, weddings, things like that, that you really cannot afford for it to go wrong. So yeah, you have a backup there for things that really, really matter, which realistically, like, every shoot should matter. But yeah, there are some that people tend to take way more care on those shoots. And then we have the allocating recording, which this is the one that I actually am hearing about for the first time, which makes a lot of sense. But maybe because I'm not a photographer, really. Like, I do take stills, but I don't do that for work as much at all, actually. But this one's basically, you get to pick what files get written on which card. So for example, I can have all of my video files recorded onto the slot A, the card in slot A. And then if I switch over to pictures and want to take pictures, whether it's JPEGs or RAW, I can go ahead and make sure that the camera is saving those files in card B, which is really cool. Very convenient later on for, I guess, organizing your files once you're done with an event or whatever. I do a lot of stuff for my church, so this actually might be very, very convenient and might be very useful for that feature. And so, of course, this is a full frame camera, which I don't know if I needed to say that, but yeah, the S1H is a full frame camera. Remember, I told you I was trying to keep things organized. I've been talking about the physical features of this camera. But yeah, so it's a full frame camera, and let's get something straight. This is a full on video camera with really, really good picture capabilities, but it's catered toward video. Just there's no if, ands, or buts about that. The EVF, from what I hear, the EVF is phenomenal. I haven't seen it myself, but I've heard nothing but great reviews about the EVF for this camera, which is good to know. So if you're shooting outdoors, it has a really, really good EVF on this camera. It still has the same Leica L mount, so it's the same as the S1 or the S1R. There are several different adapters that you can get already that you can adapt, you know, like Canon glass if that's what you use. Basic like me, I base all my glasses Canon glass, so I would need to get something like a Sigma MC21, which is the adapter for this camera to use Canon glass on. They're not quite sure what that goes for, but I can't imagine it's that much. The MC11 that I use now for Sony cameras was like $150 or something like that. So yeah, I assume it's in that ballpark. The XLR adapter, the same one that I used with my GH5, the DMW, I don't want to mess up the name, but it's basically the main SLR, the Panasonic SLR adapter that, you know, you see people use, that you've seen it on my BTS shots. For this, it's the same one that could be used on this. You could use it on both cameras. It's really, really, really good. I don't remember the last time I've captured audio with that without that. I think that it's very, very usable. And for sure on this one, it's going to be very, very helpful. You know, while I'm on the audio topic, one of the issues that I've had with the GH5 is that whenever I want to go ahead and put my, let's say my Rode VideoMic Pro Plus on the camera, what I like to do is put that microphone to a plus 10 decibels, or put it like as high as possible. And then basically in camera, I make sure that I lower the audio to like a one or two, whatever sounds the cleanest. And basically you have really, really nice preamps. You're basically using the preamps of the microphone instead of the camera. So, but the problem is the GH5 did not allow me to go too low. So whenever I had it on a plus 10, it would still basically peak. So it was kind of unusable. So this camera allows me to go much lower, a much lower volume or decibel than the GH5. So that's really, really good. I'm very, very impressed and happy with that part. So let's go into, I guess, recording formats. This is going to be a kind of a laundry list of things, but I'm going to cover the things that people really, really care about. I'm going to have a link to all of this stuff. By the way, I'm going to put like a whole bullet list of features that are, you know, I guess, impressive for this camera over at our website at iFilmmaker.tv. So basically, the recording format for this camera, well, we all know the headline feature is a 6K camera. So what does that really give you? What does that really give you, the 6K? So when you're recording 6K resolution, so I'm going to go through this. I'm here on the Panasonic website. So I'm getting the information directly from them. So in 6K, we're going to be able to record up to 24 frames per second. 24 or 2398, you know, but so that's what we're going to get in 6K format. However, it is going to be a 3:2 aspect ratio, which is totally fine because that's the aspect ratio of the sensor. So it's going to use the entirety of the sensor to give you that 6K image. Now, if you decide, well, you know, I just want to shoot in 16:9 aspect ratio like normal video, you could do that, but just understand that the camera, if you tell the camera to shoot 16:9, it's not going to use more sensor. You're actually going to lose pixels. All it's going to do is take that 3:2 aspect ratio image, which is basically a 6,000 by 4,000 in resolution, and it's just going to crop it for you. So in other words, you're not going to have the flexibility in post to crop it yourself. So it's up to you. If you're in a hurry, if you're in a time, you know, if you want to save that, skip that step, then for sure, you're still going to get that same image in 16:9. You know, but I guess you would lose the ability to kind of reframe even further. So that's basically it. But yeah, so you have that 3:2 aspect ratio. And then in a 16:9 aspect ratio, if you go down to 16:9, you can then shoot 24 and 30 frames per second in 16:9. In terms of frame rates, we're looking at if you want to go into like the 4K, 60 frames per second, it is going to have a crop. It is going to have a crop of Super 35. So if you want to go into the 4K, and by the way, this is a 420 10-bit, right? 420 10-bit, not 422 10-bit. It's 420 10-bit, but still, it's better than anything else out there right now. The fact that we get to have 10-bit in 4K 1080p recording is, I'm sorry, in 4K 60p recording is phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And by the way, that is a Super 35 crop. We're not using the full frame sensor. It's going to crop into a Super 35 sensor. So basically, I mean, you can go to full HD 1080p and you can get up to 120 frames per second in the full frame mode. You can go even higher than that in full HD. And I believe you can go up to like 144 or 180 or something like that in full HD mode with the crop, Super 35 crop, right? So yeah, the higher the resolution, the less flexibility flavors you have. The more you lower your resolution, the more options you're gonna have with that respect. It also supports the anamorphic D squeeze, which is awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. So if you're one of those that you want to get that nice cinematic look and you want to be D squeezed and whatnot, if you're using anamorphic lenses, it has like four or five different D squeezed options. And by the way, it's also supported by the image stabilization, the 5-axis image stabilization inside this camera, which is just gorgeous. Just gorgeous. 5-axis image stabilization. And you have to tell the camera which size anamorphic lens you're using so that it could use the appropriate stabilizer for that framing. I hope you guys followed that part, which is it's just amazing. It's just, you can really, really deck out the options in this camera, which is phenomenal. It's really, really good. The recording format, it's just, so from what I understand, there's 52 different flavors of recording formats, 52 different flavors, but that's all together with, you know, the H.264 with AVC HD, all that stuff. That's quite a lot. So you can really customize how you're recording this depending on the workflow that you're going for. Dynamic range. In Vlog, right? In Vlog, this camera gives us 14 plus stops of dynamic range. Let me repeat that again. This camera gives us 14 plus stops of dynamic range, which is wow. So they say this puts it in the realm of those Varicam LUTs that can be used, and you can get on the Panasonic website, they have Varicam LUTs over there. They have a whole library of them. So this can be applied to that, which is just outstanding. Outstanding. So I think this camera, it said something about, so they have 24.20 megapixels for stills, which is awesome. Awesome. This is basically like a GH5 and GH5S put together into one camera with much, much better video recording features. My goodness. Just so, so good. Again, with the physical body here, you know, it has that Nikon style on and off switch, which is pretty cool, located there. One of the things I really like about this camera, and it's going to really help me personally, I mean, if, you know, I was to get it, it's the tally lights. The tally lights. It's something that, again, you find it in video cameras, in full-on video cameras. The tally lights are basically very small LED lights that turn on that are bright red and basically tell you that you're recording. So there's a tally light in the front just above the screen, and there's a tally light, in the front where the lens is, and then so that whoever you're recording knows that it's recording. And there's a tally light in the back on top of the screen, which is awesome. In addition to this, there's also the ability to have that red border, right? The red border on the screen when you're recording. This is going to help me personally because one of the biggest issues that I've had with the GH5 is the reverse recording. And I don't know why, because there's a red button, there's a red dot that appears on screen when it's recording, but for some reason, I have a hard time, like, I guess subliminally knowing that it's off and I think I'm recording. So I can't tell you the amount of times that I've ended up reverse recording with the GH5. It's so frustrating. And one is frustrating when I don't find out, and I only find out when I'm in post and, like, you know, I put the camera in and start looking at the files. That's the worst. But it's also bad when I find out when I am recording, like in the middle, I notice that I'm reverse recording. And then I now have to go back and see what I missed. When did this start and what do I have to recapture if I can? So that's very, very annoying. The shutter button is basically still the same thing. It's also used for recording. The time code sync port, which is awesome. You can have time code in there. It has a very nice anti-aliasing filter. These are features that basically I've been hearing. It's been really, really useful, that it's very, very nice and works really great. What's next? Dual ISO. There's dual ISO in here. So the way this works, so you guys are not surprised. So the dual ISO is something that is really, really good. It lets this camera perform really, really well in low light with very, very minimal grain in the shot, and virtually no grain really when you're at the native ISO, the dual native ISO. So the cool thing is that the camera will tell you the lowest possible ISO depending on the mode that you're in. So for example, if you're shooting on Rec 709 mode, basically it's anything from like standard, native, whatever it is, the ISO is different than if you were shooting in Vlog. So in Rec 709 mode, the lowest ISO you can possibly go is 100. That's the first mode. And then the high would be the second mode, the second ISO mode, the lowest you can go is 640, right? So that's in, you know, with the image, with the saturation and contrast and all that stuff already in the picture, which is, you know, the Rec 709 mode. In Vlog mode, however, and this is something that's been getting a lot of people confused, because they're saying these Vlog numbers and people are thinking that that applies to the native Rec 709 mode, which is not the case. That's a different ISO value. So in Vlog mode, and what you've been hearing online on, you know, YouTube and whatnot, it's that the lowest on the first, on the low mode, the lowest you can go is 640. That's where it starts. In the high mode, the lowest you can go is 4,000, which is, wow. To go to 4,000 with virtually no noise in your shot is phenomenal. It won't let you go any lower than that when you're in that high mode, which is just great. So basically, this camera is it's a beauty when with regards to working in low light. Man, with all this that I've already just said, it's getting real close to like almost a perfect camera, which just, oh my goodness, it's really easy to drool over this camera right now. All right, here we go. So what I had mentioned before, it has much better lower levels of sensitive mics. What I had said before about the Rode, putting it at plus 10 decibels or whatnot, it works way better for that. You're going to get much, much cleaner audio out of the camera there. The 4K 60p video, 10-bit crop, and Super 35 sensor. I already repeated some of this stuff here. Okay, so one of the features that I wish was a little bit better, and now, you know, we're going to maybe say a couple of things here that could be used. You know what? Let me save a couple of these things for the end. Because I'm still not done drooling over this. There's this really, really cool feature called focus pull feature. So the focus pull setting is basically, it allows you to set your focus points and preset them, program them. I believe this works if you're using a native lens, right? Maybe it'll work with an adapted lens, but you do need the electronics. Don't quote me on that part. But you can basically set a focus point, like set your focus point. You set your camera manually. You program that to focus, you know, to number one. And then on number two, you set a completely different focus point. And then basically when you can tap between one and the other, and it'll, you know, kind of go in and out of focus, and you know, focus on the points that you had set it to. I believe you can program up to three different focus points, which is very, very awesome. That's very useful. That's like very, you know, high-end stuff, in the sense that having that feature, that's pretty pretty useful. I'm pretty sure a lot of you can use that feature there. The USB-C. The USB-C port, it's basically for powering only. There's no data transfer through the USB-C port. I hope that changes later, because it'd be nice to, you know, maybe connect this. You know, I was using my up until recently, I've been using my Sony A6300 as my webcam for my computer. But if I wanted to, I would like to have the option to one day use my, you know, a camera like this or any other camera with a USB-C as a webcam. Who knows? But it's nice to have that option. So anyways, for now, you can only use the USB-C for power only, but it's pretty cool because you can get just a battery bank or something like that and just connect it to the camera, and you can have it running for many, many hours. So I think that's for the good stuff. So the camera still is using a contrast-based autofocus system. Now, I can't speak too much to this feature, as I rarely use autofocus, even for my good autofocus cameras, the only one really being the A6300, but I can understand why a lot of people are not too happy about this. Contrast-based autofocus is really not that good. It doesn't work very well, as, you know, people are hoping that, you know, they would adopt some of the dual pixel autofocus system that the Canon is using, or really good face detection technology, but apparently it's just not there yet. So a lot of people are hoping that this would get better. The autofocus, very, very big and important when it comes to SLR users, really. And if they want to attract vloggers, you know, which I understand, maybe overkill for a vlogging camera, but who's to decide that? It's not me for sure. But if, you know, I think vlogging is a big thing right now, and, you know, they're missing a huge part of the market by not, you know, attracting vloggers, because they rely a lot on autofocus. Just putting that out there. So, the samples on autofocus that I saw online just showed a lot of searching, just very not too appealing at all. I am really going to miss, because they never really had it, but, you know, I mentioned earlier that this is getting closer and closer to the perfect camera, depending on, you know, who's looking at it. But yeah, this is getting closer and closer to the perfect camera. One of the things that is really, really lacking is the internal NDs. Yeah, we know it's an SLR camera, but, you know, Canon was able to make their ND mount. So they were able to make a mount that basically has a built-in ND in it. So you don't have to screw on, no matter what camera, what lens you're using. You don't have to screw on any lens and be carrying around variable ND filters. It takes time. So yeah, it would be nice to see that. Maybe Sigma would release it. You know, they already have the mount. All you got to do is install a nice variable ND thingamabob right in there, and we got it. I don't think we're asking for too much here. The external recording is basically the same. It's basically the same as the GH5, the S1, basically the same, no difference. It only goes up to 4K 60p at 10-bit, you know, nothing crazy there. It does not record 6K externally. It doesn't. Not yet. Atomos, I guess, doesn't support it right now. I assume they're talking about that. And speaking of external recording, ProRes RAW, potentially. I believe it's coming. It's not there yet, but I believe it's going to happen. Being able to record RAW externally via HDMI. I mean, the Nikon Z6 and Z7 have it. Why not? A camera of this caliber with the freaking fan built in should have RAW coming out of it. If a one that does not have a fan built in. So I believe it's happening. I want to say yes. So it's ProRes RAW recording to external recorder like the Atomos Ninja V would be a very nice addition. So those are my notes on this camera. It's truly, truly a phenomenal camera, spectacular top to bottom with just those minor small things I mentioned at the end. I want to know your thoughts on this. I want to know your thoughts on this camera. Let me know what you think. Is it a potential? It is $4,000, but after mentioning everything that I just mentioned, is this a contender for you? Is this a camera that you can see yourself purchasing and using for several years? You know, I would love to know that. Let me know. Remember, we're streaming this live over our Instagram account. Thank you for everyone that joined. I think that a lot of people decide they're just going to listen to this online or on iTunes whenever it drops. So let me know. Let me know if you think that this is going to be a camera that you might be getting. Go over to iFilmmaker.tv. Let me know your thoughts. Go shoot the comment. And by the way, I'm going to be putting all of these links over in the description for this, in the show notes for this episode. Thank you guys for tuning in. My name is Ariel Martinez. You can follow me over at arielmartinez.tv on Instagram. My website, arielmartinez.tv. Same thing, no different. Thank you guys for tuning in, and I will see you on the next one.